All right, well, what I want to do now is go back and pick up on part two. We started last Sabbath on part one of Principles for Healthy Christian Living. The operative is Christian living, and the specific here in this particular case was geared toward orienting us on helpful principles on healthy Christian living. And we covered really only one fundamental aspect last Sabbath, and if you didn't get it, in a short one-sentence summary, we could easily say, you are the temple of God. And with that being said, as was pointed out in 1 and 2 Corinthians, it is mandated on us by God that now that we have God's Holy Spirit in us, for those of you who are baptized and for those of you who are considering it, certainly something to keep in mind as you begin to count the cost, that you are the receptacle of the Holy Spirit of God and consequently responsible to God to take care of this body. And even regardless of whether or not you've got God's Holy Spirit in you, the reality, the sooner you understand the reality that you are responsible to take care of your temple, the better off you'll be. It seems this last week I've been spending more time in hospitals than I'd like to, and frankly, every time I walk down the hallways, it reminds me of the days when I ran my water treatment business in regards to kidney dialysis and so on. I spent an awful lot of time in hospitals. Hours upon hours and days upon days, and it's really a very sad situation in seeing so many of us here in the West where we've got so much to eat, so much to drink, that sometimes that happens to be our problem. But we're going to be getting into some of those details here as we go forward. But I wanted to just reemphasize the fact that we are God's temple, and we do have an incumbent responsibility on all of us to do the best we can to maintain this tremendous organism, this tremendous system, process called a human body. And later on, as we'll see in part three, the human mind and emotions, the spiritual aspect that we haven't even touched on yet and which we will not get to today simply because there's too many things yet previous that we will talk about today before we even get into talking about the emotional, mental, and spiritual aspects and impact of what goes on up here and how it affects down in our bodies. But at any rate, I want to bring your attention back here in summary to part 1 in chapter 12 and verse 1 of the book of Romans. We see here and we read, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies living sacrifices, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And I don't want to belabor what I went through last week, but I think I tried the best I could in the time that was allotted to me to illustrate to you the price that was paid for us, that we might be able to have the freedom and the privilege, it is a privilege, to be able to even consider the fact that you have the opportunity to become an immortal, to be able to make a transition from flesh and blood to this temporary condition to something that is far more long-lasting. As a matter of fact, it's eternally lasting. It's immortality. And that's what's being promised to us as a result of the hit that Jesus Christ took on our behalf so that we might be able to be covered by his blood, find mercy and grace in the eyes of God, and as a result, be rewarded with eternal life and immortality, assuming, of course, that we stay the course and we hold the line and we work within the boundaries of what God expects of us, because we all know that God does indeed have expectations upon us. And specifically, what we're talking about in this series on health and Christian living is, in particular, the expectation God has on us with respect to taking care of our bodies and minds. Now, when we ended last Sabbath, we were just about to go over to Leviticus chapter 11. We left and closed out last Sabbath with the fact and reality that all of us, I hope, came to understand that we as Christians, that's the operative, let me remind you, as Christians, principles for Christian, healthy Christian living is important then to find out fundamental, basic, foundational to this whole idea of health, Christian health, is to find out what God expects of us. Over in Leviticus 11, and I referred to it as we closed out last Sabbath, and Deuteronomy 14 lays down some criteria. It lays down the rules. It lays down the signs. It lays down the guidelines that are not suggestions. They are actual commands that you will not eat certain things, and you can, if you'd like, eat other things. But there are very specific rules God has articulated here in Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14. We're not going to spend a lot of time on it other than to just bring your attention to the material here in both of these chapters. And if you're not familiar with these chapters, do become familiar with them because it's important, at least to your diet, as to what you should and should not be eating. If indeed, two things, you want to maintain some good health, add some years to your life, and at the same time, please God. Because these are expectations He has on all of those who claim Christ as their Savior. Remember, again, the operative is we're talking about not just principles of healthy living. We're talking about principles of Christian healthy living. And that's important that we understand that distinction. So here in Leviticus chapter 11, and by the way, let me interrupt myself. I hope all of you were able to get a copy of that list I brought last week, that pass out, that handout, of which gave you a listing of clean and unclean meats and birds and fish and different things. And we have some extras back there at the PA system. So if you didn't get a copy of that last week, do go ahead and get one. It does list a lot of things that are indeed edible, as they would say, and other things that are unedible. And, I never realized there were some things on this that I didn't realize were clean. For instance, moose. I thought moose had hooves like horses, but they don't. I guess they have a split hoof. Yeah, they have a split hoof, and it's clean. You can eat moose. That was rather surprised to me. But at any rate, this list is quite helpful, I think, for many of us in acquainting us with what's clean and what isn't clean. Chapter 11, verse 9, real quickly here, just a little highlight. Chapter 11, verse 9, book of Leviticus. These shall you eat of all that are in the waters. That's the second category. The first category is located in verse 2 of chapter 11, book of Leviticus, where it says, these are the beasts which you shall eat among all the beasts that are on the earth. And let me just go through this real quickly here and back up on you from verse 9. Go to verse 3. Whatsoever parts the hoof and is cloven-footed, and choose the cud among the beasts that you eat. Nevertheless, these shall not eat of them that chew the cud or of them that divide the hoof as a camel, because he chews the cud but divides not the hoof. So he's giving you principles here. Moses is writing down, this is the book of the Torah. First five books of the Old Testament are the books of the Torah. Moses wrote them under the inspiration of God. He's giving you the principles to look at. Horses you don't eat, because horses are much like camels. They're feet, as far as that's concerned. They're not a cloven hoof. And though they may chew the cud, the fact of it is you don't eat them because the other bit of criteria is not met. And it goes on here, and it's very important, I think, for all of us who do indeed want to please God and keep good, healthy bodies and minds to become acquainted to this. Like verse 6 here, you don't eat rabbits. The hare, H-A-R-E, you don't eat rabbits. Why? Because rabbits, even though they chew the cud, have paws. They don't have a hoof, split hoof, you know. They've got paws. So you want to watch out for that. Verse 7, of course, the pig is talked about with regard to not eating it as well. Even though it has a divided hoof, it does not chew the cud. Verse 9, as I've mentioned before I interrupted myself, in the waters, very simple. Whatsoever has fins and scales in the waters, in the seas, and in the rivers, them you shall eat. What does that mean?
anything that has fins and scales. I didn't realize you could eat barracuda. I didn't realize you could eat a barracuda. I thought barracudas were unclean, but no, they're not. You can eat a barracuda. It's listed as clean meat. But a shark, you can't eat that. Can't eat a shark. Can't eat a porpoise. You got to watch out. You know, it's got no scales. You got to watch out for lobster and mussels and clams and oysters and all that stuff. Those are all the garbage cleanup duty guys. You know, that's the sanitation system. you don't want to eat those things because they're not good for you. They're not good to digest. It's like trying to digest rubber. You might as well eat rubber bands because that's what it does to your stomach. It's very hard to digest. Very, very not good for your stomachs and your internals, and certainly can cause trouble in the long run. Verse 13, these are they which you shall have in abomination among the fowls. And consequently, it goes on and he lists, you know, you shouldn't eat eagles, you don't eat ravens, watch out for vultures. In other words, you wouldn't want to eat the Hinckley buzzards that come back here every year. You want to stay away from them. Even though you see them on the road, you could easily, you know, run one over or even actually run faster than it, as long as it doesn't fly away. You don't want to eat it because it's a buzzard, it's a vulture, It deals with, you know, eating dead animals and things. And he goes on even in some principles, too, to watch out about the roadkill. You don't want to eat roadkill. Animals that are along the road that are dead, been dead, don't touch those things. You never know what killed them. It may not have been a car. It could have been a disease of some sort. So you don't want to go ahead and spend time. And all these principles are in chapter 11. I mean, there's no mystery about this stuff. There's really no mystery about this stuff. Deuteronomy 14 goes through some of the same stuff. Not as detailed as Leviticus 11, but nevertheless, something here, brethren, that we all should be very acquainted with. And it goes on in verse 21 about flying, creepy things, and little bugs that as long as they've got legs and feet, you can go ahead and eat them. But if they don't have no legs and they just have feet, don't eat them. So you have grasshoppers, you can eat grasshoppers. They got feet and legs. Locusts, they got feet and legs. So you can, these are principles that you can implement and use and say, aha, I'm hungry, I can eat that, you know. Or, uh-oh, I better let that thousand-legger go. I don't think I'll eat that centipede. Even though it might be good protein, I don't know. But there's something about what God says here. Don't eat those things that don't have any legs. If they got feet and legs, that's certainly the key. And verse 29, you know, you don't want to eat weasels and mice and tortoises and ferrets and lizards. We saw a couple of foxes in our backyard here this week. Margie and I did, three of them. And they were out there trying to, I guess, get some food and so on. And they were hanging out in our backyard in the woods because we've got about an acre of woods in the back. And they were just hanging out and just sitting around and just not really going anywhere, just sitting there like a bunch of dogs. And the easy shot, if I had my rifle, I could have easily taken one out. And, you know, but why would I do that? Can I eat it? No, it's a fox. You know, now if it was a deer, it might be a little different, but I didn't have a license, so I couldn't do that. But at any rate, point being here is this chapter, as Deuteronomy 14 illustrates, is very important in being able to identify the principles, the signs, the guidelines, the boundaries, the identifying marks by which you can make determinations on what is edible, what isn't, what you need to stay away from, and what you can go cook. So it's important, I think, that you all become familiar with Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14, simply because at the basis of good Christian health is eating the right foods. Wouldn't you agree with that? And who would know best of what are the foods you as a human being should eat other than the Creator God Himself? I mean, that certainly is indeed, I think, a no-brainer in many respects that we should take Him very seriously. Now, health is a very broad subject, and I only have so much time to really take opportunity to present to all of you the aspects of health. There will be some things that I probably will discuss in passing as we go through, but will not be taking any time and stopping along the way simply because There's so much to talk about when you talk about health, when you talk about food, when you talk about good habits and bad habits in respect to even cooking. I mean, even cooking, you know, on how you cook is an important technique in being able to maintain the quality of the food and maximizing what the food can give you in terms of enzymes and different vitamins and minerals. And all the things. If you overcook something, you could take it, take the value right out of it. You know, just like milk today, they homogenize it and so forth. And a lot of the value of milk and the additional hormones they put in it causes difficulty in people in some respects, simply because they make and do additives to a lot of our foods. And we're going to get into some of this as we proceed here. So all I'm saying is there are a lot of things that we could talk about regarding health. And in putting this together, what I tried to do was to address the subject from some foundational points. So I'm going to just address primarily three areas here today, if I get through it, in hopes to acquaint you with why you need to be at least alert, aware, and perhaps, if we're all honest with ourselves, including yours truly, more vigilant about what we ingest or what we import. Because without getting too specific, what we import can affect what we and how we export. If you know what I'm talking about. And we are an organism that exists from those two aspects. We import and we export. And if your exporting isn't no better than your importing, or your what you're importing is causing you difficulty in your exporting, that too can cause you sickness and illness just simply by virtue of backup. I'm talking to you in my water treatment terminology. But we're talking more about than just water treatment. But I think you get my drift. I can tell by the smiles on your face. But my point that I want to make here is that we are what we eat, and it's been said in most holistic circles, as my wife explained to me this morning, food is your best medicine. Not prescriptions. Food is your best medicine. Meaning, prevention is your best method to good health. Prevention. Being on the front side, not on the back side. Not reacting to an illness. Not responding to sickness. But trying to avoid it. Trying to avoid it. That's key in good health. And in good Christian living, prevention. And food is certainly at the basis of this. Food can be good for us, and as you are about to be introduced to the fact, food can poison us, depending on what and how much of what we eat and we import into our bodies. So my hope is today that as I share with you some of these statistics and as I illustrate to you through some of the things that I brought along with me, that you will begin to understand that we as human beings are vulnerable to the environment around us, the habits by which we've picked up, and the way we view things, that is the priority and importance that we place on certain things. The sooner we understand that you are in charge of one of the most awesome machines, the human body, the sooner you understand that, hopefully the sooner you will treat it with the greatest respect, honor, dignity, and integrity. You, remember, are the temple of God. You were created in God's image. That's important. Don't forget that fundamental premise we talked about last Sabbath. If you haven't heard the sermon from last Sabbath, I strongly recommend you get that disc or get a copy of it. But that's important to lay that foundation, because everything we're going to talk about today emerges from that foundation. It goes without saying, we're framed in the fact that we have an incumbent responsibility, that we are God's mechanism. We are God's property. And if you're a baptized member of God's church, you are owned by God, and therefore he now is your landlord. And he's expecting you to take care of his property for all intents and purposes, because he paid and purchased you with the blood of his son, Jesus Christ. So it is important. And I want to start out with the fact that what we import is important. What we import is important. But how much we import, how much we eat, is also important. How much we eat. In other words, what am I talking about? Portions. I'm talking about portions. People sometimes overeat, wouldn't you agree? That's pretty common. Many people eat until they're full. And they determine how they're full by how they feel. And unless they feel full, they keep eating. and eating and eating. And sometimes, consequently, guess what? Because calories in do not equate to the calories out, you gain weight. And therefore, today, 36.5% of the population of the United States of America is obese. That means their body mass, their BMI, their body mass index is in excess of 30. Body fat is in excess of 30. 36.5, that's more than one third of the population of the United States is obese, meaning their body mass is in excess of 30. It's amazing, some of these statistics. Obesity contributes to a $3.8 trillion cost to healthcare. $3.8 trillion. That's with a T. And that was a 2015 statistic. The ongoing health conditions of obesity that obesity causes is heart conditions, high blood pressure, strokes, type 2 diabetes, and cancer. And you could go on and on and on about all kinds of additional sicknesses and diseases that obesity essentially causes. It leads to heart disease, which is the leading cause. I found this rather interesting. I kind of knew about this or heard about it, but I confirmed it. Heart disease is the leading cause of death of women, more than men. Women die of heart disease more than men. As a matter of fact, 35.3% of all women above 20 years old, more than one-third of all the women in the United States die of heart disease above 20. Why? Oh, you'll see why. Because guess what? If you continue to abuse something, it will eventually catch up with you later on. We take better care of some of the things that we own, like our houses and cars, than we do ourselves. We will go out and obsess and fuss over a car, especially if it's an antique car, more so than figuring out what we're going to eat or how much we're going to eat. And as a result, you can go, you can see all the healthcare facilities we have in this country. They're loaded. They are loaded with people that have all kinds of diseases. Strokes are the fifth leading cause of death in the United States. Heart disease still is number one. Cancer is number two. Respiratory sicknesses, emphysema and so forth, is number three. Accidents, number 4. Diabetes, I jump ahead, number 7. Kidney disease is the 9th most killing situation. Kidney disease. Why is there so much kidney disease today? You'll see a little bit as we go along as to why there is so much kidney disease today. I came out of the water treatment industry. One of my largest segments of business was kidney dialysis centers, where we would install and maintain and manage water treatment systems that purified the water so people who had kidney failure could dialyze on these kidney machines with pure water. That was what my job, part of my job. I mean, I had other clients too, but kidney dialysis was a rather large business segment or sector of my business and of my career throughout the history in water treatment. Fact of it is, it was a growing business. Every year there was another dialysis unit popping up, and I can't tell you how many times I would ask a doc, what's going on? What is happening? And oh, he'd tell me, which I'm going to share with you some of the conversations I had with these guys, as to why and what contributed to this massive emergence of an industry called kidney dialysis. I bet you drive by kidney dialysis centers where you go on the streets. You see them, DaVita and so forth, and Fresenius. Different facilities where you go in there as an outpatient, sit in a lazy boy chair for 4 hours, hook yourself up to a machine, and get your blood cleaned because your kidneys can't clean you from the urema poison that builds up just naturally from the things that you drink and eat. Then you're okay for about 3 days. You're like an addict, so to speak. Without a kidney dialysis treatment, you would ultimately build up that urema poisoning in you and die. That's what happens. So it's important we take care of our system, because along with kidneys, we've got pancreases, we've got livers, we've got hearts, stomachs, intestines, big and small. We've got all kinds of stuff in here. This machine, this atomical machine that all of us have, that is affected by what we import and how much we import. And again, I remind all of us, just as in passing, I'm not going to cover a lot about our gut, but if you don't have a good export system, things will back up and compound the effects of what you're importing, because you've just added another dynamic to the problems that you're dealing with. So it's important we keep all of this in balance. Suicide is the 10th largest killer. 75% of all strokes occur in people over 65 years old. Stroke risks double every decade over 55. So when I was 55, I'm 65 now, I had a certain risk of stroke. Now that I'm 65, my risk is doubled to have a stroke at my age. That's just the reality that we deal with. Who's got a stopwatch? On your telephone? Could I ask? Stopwatch? On your telephone. Go ahead. Every 40 seconds for the next 5 minutes, I just want you to say, 40! Okay? For the next 3 minutes. 3 minutes. Yeah. Go. Every 40 seconds, someone suffers a stroke in the United States. Every 40 seconds. Someone suffers from a stroke in the United States. So the point of it is, there are rules that we need to follow. There are rules we need to follow with regard to health. And in the West, here in the U.S., we eat a lot. We eat a lot. But our nutritional value is not a lot. That's the problem. We eat a lot of substance. We eat a lot of substance. Somebody just had a stroke. That's the reality. That's the reality. And we eat a lot of food, but we don't have a lot of nutrition. We don't have a lot of value to the foodstuffs that we eat. And consequently, we find ourselves in the trouble that we have. Now, Being in water treatment and spending 33 years in water treatment, I've had the opportunity to see a lot of things. Somebody just had a stroke. And this is just a small demonstration of something I want to share with all of you that came out of my home drinking water system a half hour before I left today. And I want you to know my drinking water system, meaning only the water that I and Margie use for drinking, cooking, making lemonade and soups and so forth. Somebody else just had a stroke. Is gone through this filter 6 months. That is Cleveland City Water. And that is a brand new filter still in the package, which I'm replacing this with. And that's after 6 months of use of just drinking water. That's not shower. Didn't shower with it. Not a lot of water. It's my point. It's not a lot of water. It's only my drinking, cooking, eating water that went through that. 6 months collected this much dirt on that filter. And I could take you into Akron and Canton. Woo! Canton. I wouldn't even want to tell you what's in Canton's water. And Cincinnati City Water? Cincinnati City Water? Has microparticulates, organics of, you name it. Let me just remind all of us where we flush our toilets. Where do we flush our toilets? We flush them into our drinking water. Well, they purify the water, right? Yeah, right. No, they don't. They do, but they don't get into the small organic particulates. There's no way. It's too expensive. They have big sand filters. They have, some cities have carbon filters. If you go down to certain cities, but maybe small and they got a high tax rate, then they bought a reverse osmosis device, it's a whole different story. But in most cases, whether it's Cleveland, Los Angeles, New York, whether it's Chicago, you go to any of these cities, all they've got is a humongous sand filters. Humongous in some cases, sometimes carbon filters. And they chlorinate the daylights out of the water. And chlorine is a carcinogen. Drink chlorinated water, you might as well be drinking poison. Don't drink chlorinated water. Now I'm spending too much time on water. But at any rate, water is an important element that all of us need to be cognizant of. If you do nothing, go to Home Depot and buy yourself just a little carbon filter. Buy yourself just a little carbon filter and remove the chlorine. That'll do you a lot of good just by doing that as well. But again, the point that I want to make here is that it's important for all of us to recognize that we need to be cognizant of what goes into our bodies. So here we have a society here in the West that deals with a lot of additives in foods. I didn't know where to start with all of the varieties that I could present to you with regards to what foods are made up of. But I thought I would focus on two major ones. And the first one is in processed foods, and we'll get into specifics with regard to this. But I want to quote you from an article from Reuters written by Melanie Warner. And she says this, Warner said, and I'm quoting, that while scientists and even marketing executives at food companies do care about making their food healthier and want to do so, it's not easy. It's really difficult for them to do because it's not what they're designed to do, she explained. And a lot of times when they try, the executives of the food companies, and make healthy food, and they try to take out things like sugar and salt, which will be the primary two items we're going to be covering for the remainder of this presentation. Sugar and salt, when they take that out, the products fall apart and the sales drop. And so in light of the fact of money driving P&Ls, money driving stock values, these companies continue to put in the salts, and the sugars. We'll be covering those two items primarily. Why? Because those two items, brethren, are foundational to kidney failure, foundational to high blood pressure, foundational to hypertension, foundational to cancer, foundational to breaking down your immune system so that you can't even, in some cases, fight off a common cold. And that's why when you do get sick, hopefully you respond with at least this logic. Cut out the sugar. Don't take any more sugar. As you'll see. Why? Because sugar suppresses your immune system. And it leaves you vulnerable to getting sick. But we'll get to that in a moment. She continues, Warner said, there's an estimated 5,000, that's why I'm just keeping it to two, 5,000 different additives that are allowed to go into our food, but the FDA doesn't actually know how many additives are going into our food. This is in part because regulations are not only self-regulatory, so the food industry is doing the testing. In other words, you've got the fox guarding the chicken coop. Ha! But it is all voluntary, she said. The ingredient companies don't actually have to tell the FDA about a new ingredient. If they choose to, they can simply just launch it into the market. The FDA doesn't know about them, and nobody else really knows about them either. And this is from Mrs. Warner's article on processed foods distributed by Reuters News Network. Now, with regards to sugar, I'm just going to read some of this stuff. I just want to share with you some very important aspects, realizations, and understandings of what we're dealing with today in the year 2016, 2017. These statistics are very current in this regard, and this comes from the American Consumer website where it talks about sugar. We're going to talk about sugar now. The United States Department of Agriculture reports the average American consumes between 150 and 170 pounds of sugar. 150 and 170 pounds of sugar. This is a 10-pound bag of sugar. A 10-pound bag of sugar. The average American eats 15 to 17 of these per year. Per year, that goes in to the average American. Now, granted, there are some Americans that'll eat 29, 30, 35 of those bags in a year. You see them walking around weighing 300, 500, 400 pounds. Not all, because there are pituitary issues. There are other things, you know, that thyroid problems that cause overweight. So don't take me out of context here. But what I am saying is that that does contribute to obesity and kills your kidneys and a lot of other organs that you have under your skin, in your body, between your bones, and of which, consequently, the medical industry is constantly attempting to try to bail water, figuratively speaking, out of the situation because of us putting water into the system, figuratively speaking. But at any rate, I quote here, for every American who eats 5 pounds of sugar each year, there's one who eats 295 pounds. That's a lot of sugar. During the early 1800s, in the 19th century, Cowboys and Indians, Billy the Kid, Jesse James, those guys, on an average, only ate 4 to 6 pounds of sugar a year. A year. 4 to 6 pounds. Not even a bag. That's a 10-pound bag. They didn't even finish that bag per year in the 19th century. Today, people are eating 17 of those. On an average, there are some that eat more than that. 20, 30 bags a year. of that. There's been a steady increase in consumption of the United States as well. Imagine, as I've already pointed out, the fact that these are 17 bags on an average that you would eat there. To break it down even more, eating 150 to 170 pounds of sugar in 1 year is equivalent to consuming a half a pound of sugar a day. All right, let's break it down. Half a pound of sugar a day. Come on, Bill. Seriously? Well, listen to this. That's 30 to 60 teaspoons of sugar in a 24-hour period. Okay? The average 12-ounce can of pop, the average 12-ounce can of pop contains 8 ounces of simple sugar. It only takes 4 12-ounce cans of pop to equal a quarter pound of sugar. I've known people who drink 6 liters of 7-Up a day. 6 liters of 7-Up a day. I know people who get up in the morning and drink Coke. Drink Coke almost every hour of their waking moments. Instead of coffee, they drink Coke for the caffeine, not realizing the consumption of the sugar they're importing into their spleens and into their livers and into their kidneys and their bladders. And if you're drinking soft water, I could put salt up here as well, because for every 1 ion of hardness you remove with a water softener, that's a calcium, a magnesium, a hard ion, a cation, for every 1 ion of hardness you remove from water softener in your water, which Cleveland has 9 grains hard, Akron's got 30 grains, I mean Canton's got 30 grains hard. So when you drink soft water in Canton, the taste is quite different than what you would have in Cleveland, simply because here's the ratio of exchange. 2 sodium ions for every 1 hard ion removed. You're adding sodium to your diet, not even realizing it, by drinking soft water. That's bad for your heart. If you've got high blood pressure, you are killing yourself. Don't drink soft water. Never drink soft water. It's not good for you. Not good for you at all. Culligan made millions on the fact that a water softener was a water purifier. Wrong. Wrong. Fake news. Now, we're just talking about pop. Let's add cakes and candies, cookies and donuts, and ice cream into the equation. Let's add barbecue sauce and breads and canned fruits and cookies and crackers and frozen TV dinners. Hot dogs, ketchup, marinades, peanut butter, pickles, salad dressing, soup and vegetables, and it goes on and on and on. Too much sugar is harmful to the body, promotes inflammation and disease. It can lead to organ malfunction and hormone disruption. Sugar. When these systems are disturbed and unbalanced, several other pathological conditions manifest. Allergies, arthritis, behavioral problems. You ever give a can of pop to a kid? Did you ever give a can of pop? I've given pop to my grandson, you know. And then all of a sudden, 15 minutes later, he's all sugared up. and I always tell him, you're all sugared up, you know, and he's Ricochet Rabbit. But then, after, if you don't give him another one, of course, which some, I don't, but some people, you know, will give their grandchildren and or their own children pop after pop after pop after pop, and the kid is wired for sound all day long, running around, climbing the walls, swinging on the chandeliers, and then at some point, the crash occurs. Then he gets crabby, and then the parents spank him because he's crabby. And it's a vicious circle. In the meantime, the child is dying and being poisoned to death by virtue of some of these what seem to be behaviors that are, well, he's suffering from ADD. No, he's not. He's suffering from too much sugar. It's not ADD. But people don't think that way. They don't connect those dots, see? And then you add another element. I won't go into this either, but you add another element. Oh, yeah, the kid is suffering from ADD, so what do? We give him some kind of neutralizer, Thorazine or something, or whatever these drugs are that, you know, sedate the kid. Ritalin. Yeah, Ritalin. And you add a component that compounds the problem, because that's not the problem. You're treating the effect. Where's the cause? That's what you need to get at. And I say, cut out the pop, cut out the donuts, cut out the cake, cut out the cookies, and see where that puts you. In other words, level the playing field. Extract these things out of the equation so you can see things for what they are without the effects going on that these items, sugar, and we haven't even got to salt yet, sugars and salts cause. So here we go. Behavioral problem. Cancer and tumors. Sugar. Degenerative organ disease, depression, diabetes, immune disruptions, migraines, all of these things are caused, and it's fact, it's proven, too much sugar. I can't drink pop. It's just the way I am. I mean, I can drink one can maybe of Coke or Pepsi or whatever it is, but if I start drinking too much pop, personally for me, I get a headache. I can't process the sugar. I don't know what it is in me, but I just can't do it. So I don't drink pop. I just don't drink. I drink beer, you know, but I don't drink pop. I'm just being honest. But the point of it is, sugars do cause headaches. They can cause headaches in certain people, and certainly obesity and tooth decay as well. If you are, and I'm quoting, sick several times throughout the year, you may want to look at your sugar consumption, because excessive sugar consumption depresses your body's immunity. Notice this. I'm quoting now from this. This is interesting, brethren. Listen to this. Studies have shown that consuming 75 to 100 grams of simple sugar, about 20 teaspoons of sugar, in the amount of found in 2.5 average 12-ounce cans of soda, can suppress the body's immune response considerably. Just 2.5 cans of Coke, 2.5 cans of Pepsi, 2.5 cans of 7-Up can cause your immune system to be suppressed excessively. Suppressed meaning it cannot drive the white blood cells to where they need to go to kill that bacteria. The white blood cells are lassoed and held back, and they can't make the move to where they need to go in order to beat back that cold or to beat back that flu. So what do? We go get a flu shot. Go get a flu shot. And compound the problem by importing something else. Now, I'm not against flu shots, don't get me wrong. But I'm just saying some of these things just compound. One thing leads to another. We are what we eat. We are what we eat. Your best medicine is food, but the right kind of food, the right kind of food. And remember, in the West, we eat a lot of food, but we get no nutrition. And why? Primarily, I'm just focusing on these two elements because they're so foundational to so much. Sugar and salt. We'll get to salt here, I hope, in a moment. These sugars are known to create 40 to 50% drops in the ability of white blood cells to kill bacteria and germs within the body. The immune suppressing effect of sugar starts less than 30 minutes after importing, ingesting, and many last for up to 5 hours. So if you drink 2.5, 3 cans of pop, take in a cake, maybe put a piece of pudding in there, some ice cream, big bowl of ice cream, you know how some people eat ice cream for comfort food. They sit back there and they watch a football game and they sit there with a big gig quart of ice cream, you know, and they're just piling it in, you know, because they like that. You could expect about 5 to 6 to 7 hours of immune suppression, of which in now you are more vulnerable to getting sick than you ever were without before you were starting to eat all that sugar. You're putting and adding a vulnerability to yourself of getting sick by doing that, because you're suppressing those white blood cells. You're damming them up, not allowing them to move out, not allowing them to herd around a bacteria, to herd around. This is all going on in your body. It's all going on in your body. By consuming, listen to this, by consuming 15 of these a year. Oh, my. Are you kidding me? Okay. By consuming 15 to 17, I don't know, I'm into this. I don't know if you are, but I am. But what I'm saying is by consuming 15 to 17 of these 10-pound bags, 15 to 17 a year, average, remember that's what I said, on an average, you're suppressing your immune system by 80, they've figured it out to be 80,000 hours. 80,000 hours divided by 24 hours, you've got your calculator, is 3,333 days divided by 365 days a year. You, by eating this 17 times or 15 times, and those who eat more, maybe 30 of those 10-pound bags, are suppressing, just on the average, suppressing 9.1 years, your immune system is being suppressed by just doing this for 1 year. And you wonder why you catch the flu. You wonder why you get sick and get a cold. You wonder why you're suffering from kidney disease. You wonder why all of a sudden you've got cancer. Brethren, we need to wake up. We really do need to wake up. And the fact of it is, the culprits, don't get me wrong, people are not taking spoons of fulls of this and eating it. You're getting it in your prepackaged processed foods. If you don't cook for yourselves, you're ingesting this with the additives that they put in there. TV dinners, pot pies, you name it. It doesn't even have to be a cake. It doesn't even have to be a cake. And where you are now, you're laying the foundation for where you're going to be in 10 years, 15 years, 30 years, the sooner you develop good eating and drinking habits, get yourself a carbon filter, get the chlorine out of the water, watch the processed foods and all the sweets and desserts that you eat. I'm not saying you can't eat desserts. I'm not saying you can't have, you know, a pot pie once in a while. But if you've got a regular ingestion, a regular importing system, that's where you're getting all of your food, and you're up around 10 to 15 to 17 of these bags a year, you just suppressed your immune system for 9 years. Even if you stopped. And how many of us have been eating our 15 bags a year? You know. But if it wasn't so sad, it might be a laughing matter, but it isn't a laughing matter. And so consequently, we've got obesity, we've got all these diseases that we're dealing with, and as a result, consequently, sicknesses are indeed overwhelming us, especially here in the United States and in the West, I could say in general, be it Europe and Canada. And the healthcare industry does definitely illustrate so much of this in terms of it being a multi-trillion with a T, trillion dollar industry. So with that, being that I ran out of time, I'm not even going to get to salt, because I wanted to spend some time on salt. And I want to park on salt for a little bit, and I'm going to need some extra time for that. You probably won't come back anymore. You're out of here. I can't wait till this guy shuts up. But at any rate, we'll pick up part three. I guess we're going to have four parts on this, but we'll pick up on part three regarding salt pick up the story on the effect of how salt impacts our health and where we find salt in so many areas of our lives. But do keep in mind, brethren, how you and what you do eat. How much you eat of what you're eating is also important. Don't forget. Don't be so blinded by the quality that I've been talking about here, by the fact of the quantity. Quantity is important too. Don't overeat. Don't eat until you're full. Push yourself away from that table, even when you're still feeling hungry. That's nothing to be ashamed of, and certainly will do you better in learning the discipline of eating, keeping yourself in nutrition, but not overeating to where you exceed the amount of calories you burn during the day. Try to find that balance. Try to find that balance on where your intake is and your outgo. Because remember, again, if you don't burn it up, you're going to gain weight. You're going to gain weight. So you've got to manage yourself. You know, if I want to have an extra beer, I go run 2 more miles. I'm just being cute, but you know what I'm saying. You've got to make room. You've got to make room for what you take in. Otherwise, it will develop more room on you. And it'll become bigger around your belt, and you'll have to end up spending money, changing your clothes, and all that stuff. But we'll pick up on part 3 with salt in 2 weeks. Next week, though, we'll have Tony Bugert here.